We have Lara Watson on the line, and Lara is the Indigenous Officer at the ACTU, the Australian Council of Trade Unions. Hi, Lara.
Thank you for having me on the show, and I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of all your listeners and on the lands that I meet today. The community development program, particularly around COVID, there's a lot of kind of issues out there. I know when the government was first looking at these isolation clauses and, you know, people over the age of 50 staying home, we knew that a plan had been sent to the job service providers in remote communities. And we got wind of that. And the plan did not include the CDP workers at all. So they were still expected to turn up to do group activities, regardless of whether that would be detrimental to their health. So we had to act really quickly at that time, and we're extremely grateful for our allies within Parliament, like Senator Malandari McCarthy, that we jumped on it quite early and quickly and took government on for them to also be included in what is the best option for remote workers. And it was finalised that CDP workers had also had to isolate it, and they would not be penalised, and the whole penalty system and the obligation of work is suspended until after the COVID crisis. Unfortunately, we still have the program in place, and we've had CDP workers and supporters all over the country still trying to keep this issue alive in mainstream media, and we keep putting pressure on government to change some of the clauses that are tied to the program.
Okay, for listeners that don't know, can you elaborate a little bit more on what the CDP is, how long it's been around, and what are people paid?
So the Community Development Program is the remote version of Work for the Dole. So we have two programs like this in our country. We've got Job Active and the Community Development Program. But there are some very, very big differences between the two. And one is because CDP is remote, there are extra added, I guess, clauses that they have to abide by than Job Active. Now, because some things are very clearly different, like the hours that they work, like the obligation or the mutual obligation to attend and the penalty system, we say CDP is racist because the majority of people on CDP are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, whereas Job Active is predominantly non-Indigenous in your urban and city situations. Yeah. What we also have is, on CDP, we've got workers that are in jobs that we consider wage jobs if it was anywhere else in the country. And people are being paid a wage and have workplace conditions, access to workers' compensation and superannuation and certain protections within the job. Whereas CDP workers don't get any of that. You know, they are expected to turn up for what the government calls an activity, but they're actually doing a job alongside another fly-out Indigenous worker that's being paid $50 an hour, and they're getting the equivalent to a New Start payment. It's ridiculous, it's racist, it's punitive, and it needs to go.
Absolutely, I agree. And a lot of these workers on CDP would also have their income quarantined, is that right? Basics code?
Yes. So particularly, where we've seen the quarantine is through the Northern Territory with the basic card, and then in South Australia around Port Augusta and all of Western Australia. So this is where they get their payments. They get majority of the payment put onto that income management. And look, we all know the issues with that. Predominantly, you know, I look at the way that I shop, and I usually sit there with all the catalogues, work out what all the specials are, what I can afford, then I go around to the shops and get as much as I can for my money, whereas you can't do that when your money's quarantined and only will accept the card in certain shops. So it kind of cuts out that ability to be able to manage your money. It's also not accessible through any stores like Salvation Army or Vinnie's, where you might go and get some cheap crockery or clothes. So you don't have that access either. And I know Christmas time for myself, you know, everything is on a budget. And if you don't have that capacity to be able to shop around, then you just don't have the money to spread it out through Christmas. You know, we know, we've seen programs that work in remote communities. And what we know works is where there is community control. So they know what they need and what training and skills they need in the community to be able to build up workers' capacity and in areas where they will find work. One of the saddest things of my job is when I go out into remote communities and I look around and I see all these non-Indigenous people working in jobs, particularly with construction and, you know, renovation on homes and new builds. But there is the ability to be able to train up local people around the jobs that are in communities. We had a fully qualified builder. He'd done his apprenticeship in 26. He spent 4 years on his apprenticeship and he couldn't find a job. So this was our Alco Island.
Yep.
And yet when you looked around, we counted over 30 non-Indigenous fly-in, fly-out workers that were working on new builds and renovations. So the jobs are there. It's just government does not want to invest in real jobs, in the training required to ensure those real jobs are in our community. And we know that our communities want that. We know people are putting their hand up, I want to become an electrician or I want to become a plumber, but they're not being given the opportunity to do that.
Is there, you know, besides the ACTU, is there much pressure to force these issues?
Yeah. There are a lot of community-run organisations. There's some land councils and a lot of kind of, you know, local elders that are putting pressure on. It takes a real lot, though, for us to be able to get this up in mainstream media.
Yep.
And that's where we need the issue, because then that'll take government care, because it's getting enough kind of profile that it's making mainstream, so therefore they're affected and they know Australians want us to do something about that. And that's what we need. We just need more people talking about the issue so that it does get up into mainstream media. So we have got it there before and we can get it there again. We're not going to push it through this COVID crisis. Because a lot of our remote communities are under way too much stress at the moment with what's going on. But we've certainly got our doors open. If anyone wants to ring us or contact us about what's going on, we're here. But we will really pick it up and ramp it out once things settle down from the COVID-19 crisis.
And Ken Wyatt, is he someone, you know, that could highlight these things if he wanted to?
Yeah, we put our feelers out.
Yep.
But, you know, Ken is very much a part of the machinery. Yes. Sometimes we think he's sticking his head out and might be listening back in. But it's not an avenue that we've closed currently. Like, we'll keep trying and we'll keep trying to have these conversations, because we really don't care what government is in power.
Yep.
What we care about is that this CDP program is changed. You know, it needs to be community controlled. The money needs to be invested in local jobs. So whether it's Ken or whether it's the next minister, we'll just keep knocking on the door and hopefully one door will open. Like, when the last election come around, our communities voted against CDP, and that was clear in the booth. But what happened was the rest of Australia voted some obscure way and we end up losing what we fought so hard for that was going to get rolled out with a different government. So it kind of took us back to scratch, but we'll just go harder again.
Thank you, Lara Watson, Indigenous Officer at the Australian Council of Trade Unions, ACTU, talking to us here at 3CR about the CDEP. And something that Lara did mention is that today, 1st of May, and it is the anniversary of the 1946 Pilbara strike. That was when Aboriginal pastoral workers walked off stations in protest at low pay. Many workers were not paid at all, but compensation of rations and of tea, flour, sugar and tobacco. And government policies of the time, enforced by station owners and police, meant that workers were not free to leave their employment or move around their country, as they had done. So the strike, it saw about 800 people leave the stations between 1946 and 1949, and some were forced to return to work, but others sought new occupations and gained independence. So that's definitely something that we, you know, should remember about people's rights, whether that be as Aboriginal people or as workers or as Aboriginal people as workers, is that we have these rights and they're worth fighting for. And we have these examples throughout our history of these actions that we're not really encouraged to remember as part of our collective story, but we're here to remind you. That's why you're listening to 3CR. Stay tuned.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio. Stay tuned.